Hello and a warm welcome to the Mission Junior podcast. I'm your host, Girish Shivakumar. If this is the first episode that you're listening to, I highly recommend that you check the other episodes on the Mission Junior podcast. I'm sure you will enjoy the other episodes just like the way you would enjoy this. And I hope you check the previous episode about the Gandhi Global Solar Yatra. Just like I mentioned towards the end of the last episode, I would highly encourage you to sign up for the program. The event, the global event, is scheduled to happen on the 2nd of October 2019, commemorating the 150th birth anniversary of Mahatma Gandhi. So the Solar Man of India aims to get more people on board and set a new record. So the link is ggsy.in. And now let's go to this week's feature segment. If the title on this podcast episode caught your attention, yes, we are going to talk about lithium. Lithium is not something new. Over the last couple of decades, any electronic gadget that you brought had lithium in it. You would have been surprised to find that the gadgets of today are getting sleek in design but are packing more battery power in it. All thanks to the development of lithium-ion batteries over the last couple of decades. No matter where you are in the world listening to this podcast, you would have definitely heard about electric vehicles. Governments around the world are increasingly turning their focus towards promoting electric vehicles. New models are being launched and electric vehicles are touted to be the next big revolution in the automobile sector. But there is a key resource constraint that associated with it. You'd also probably heard that lithium is very scarce and that is the reason probably it's being called as a white petroleum. And just like petroleum, currently the identified lithium reserves around the world are very limited. Take this for example. Nearly 80% of the identified lithium reserves are available in just 4 countries. Australia and the ABC Triangle of South America, that is Argentina, Bolivia and Chile. And these constraints are definitely not going to stop the automobile manufacturers from rolling out new electric vehicles in the coming years. So, who's my guest and what does this company have to offer in the space?
I'm Teague Egan. I'm the founder and CEO of EnergyX, which is short for Energy Exploration Technologies. We started the company a little under 2 years ago, and we're exploring renewable energy technology solutions, specifically lithium production and lithium extraction for renewable batteries.
So lithium seems to be an important topic in recent years, especially considering there is a huge emphasis on electric cars. So from your opinion, what do you think is the projected demand for lithium going forward?
That's a good question. So lithium has been, like you said, growing in demand over the past decade or so. And because of that growth in demand, we've seen a tremendous spike in the price, just because the major lithium production companies really couldn't keep up with the demand. So a few of the majors, Albemarle, to be one of them, which is the biggest lithium production company in the world, has increased its projected demand year over year. So in 2015, they projected the 2025 demand to be somewhere around 500,000 metric tons per year. Then in 2017, they projected it to be 800,000 tons a year. And then this year, they projected it to be anywhere from 1 million to 1.3 million tons in the year 2025. So each year, you've seen this dramatic percentage increase of the projected demand in the year 2025. So what that leads me to believe is that the 2025 demand is going to be actually higher than what they've even predicted this year. Probably on the order of around 1.5 million metric tons that year.
Why do you see this change in demand forecast? Do you think this is because there is change in the stance of various governments, or various governments are having ambitious commitments? Do you think this is because of that, or do you think there are other reasons to this change in demand forecast?
Yeah, I think that you see all of these big auto manufacturers making announcements, rolling out fleets of all electric vehicles. Every single auto manufacturer has now made some sort of electric vehicle announcement, whether it's Ford, Volkswagen, Mercedes, Toyota, they're all moving in that direction. And with millions of electric cars, you're going to need millions of batteries. And with millions of batteries, you need lots of lithium. So right now, electric vehicles are driving this demand shift. Once electric vehicles are a mainstay in the market, the battery demands are going to move towards even bigger applications, such as home storage, commercial grid storage. All of that is being driven by our society's cognitive awareness of moving towards a renewable energy future.
We have been using batteries for a long, long time. And in fact, the very first automobiles were powered by batteries. There are many chemistries of batteries available. So why does lithium continue to gain more attention? And why is it the most crucial element in the battery puzzle?
That's a good question. So lithium is the crucial element in batteries. There are several different types of battery chemistries, but most, if not all of them, include lithium. So most of the other elements, with the exclusion of cobalt, are readily available, such as your graphites or your iron phosphates, stuff like that. But lithium is really the bottleneck, because lithium is necessary in all rechargeable batteries, especially if you want to use them in cars. So there are like acid lead batteries, but those are significantly heavier than lithium. So those are a bad option to use in cars. And obviously in cars, you need some sort of light material so that your car, because it's a direct correlation of the range of, that the car can travel to the weight of the car, right? So lithium is absolutely necessary in car batteries. Cobalt is one of the cathode materials that's available for certain battery chemistries. And there's a lot of swirling drama around cobalt because of the way that it's produced. But cobalt can be replaced, and cobalt is not used in a lot of lithium batteries. But lithium is really here to stay. I mean, the reason that it's so important is because it's the lightest metal on the periodic table, and it has one of the highest energy densities. So energy density is a really important element when you're considering batteries. That is how much energy the battery can store compared to the weight. And lithium seems to be what is the element of choice for that, and it seems to be here to stay.
Thanks, Teague. That was pretty good summary of what the chemistry is. But I agree, and I also agree to the point that cobalt as a key element is moving on because a lot of manufacturers are trying to reduce the fraction of cobalt in the chemistry. So as you rightly pointed out, cobalt might not be the material of choice, but lithium surely is. In terms of the extraction, I think you're pioneering in that. But what are the current challenges in the lithium extraction and processing for these applications that you see?
So the current methods of extraction for lithium, there's really kind of two buckets here. There's hard rock mining, which is what one would typically think of like a big open, say, copper pit, where these big tractors and dump trucks shovel out this rock, and then you treat the rock or the clay chemically to extract the lithium. You know, that's a very capital intensive procedure. It leaves a pretty big footprint on the environment with lots of carbon emissions. The other way is extraction from brines. And if you're unfamiliar with brines is a fancy word for really salty water. Salty, and when I say salty, I mean on the order of ocean water being 3.5% salinity. These brines that they find lithium in are anywhere from 20 to 40% salinity. So like extremely, extremely salty water. Think about the Dead Sea, right? Where you can float in the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea, I think, is about 37% salinity. that percentage of salt that's in these brines is really just a mixture of all of these different metal ions or different salts, right? So they can be made up of potassium, magnesium, lithium, sodium, calcium, sulfates. That is what actually makes up the salinity. And that's to a lesser degree the case in ocean water as well, right? Those salts are just different minerals. So the question then becomes, how do you extract those valuable minerals from the salt brines? And that's what these current production companies do with the salt brines that they find in an area in South America known as the lithium triangle. The current way that they do that, they pump out the salt brine from these underground rivers or underground aquifers, groundwater, so to say, and they put it into these massive evaporation ponds. I'm talking square miles large, multiple square miles. One of the companies down in South America has 10 square miles of ponds. That's like the size of, you know, lower Manhattan. So they put it into these ponds and then they let the brine sit there and they let the sun naturally evaporate out the H2O, the water part. And then these minerals precipitate out one by one. And lithium being the most hydrated ion, meaning there's the most water attached to the lithium ion, takes the longest to precipitate because it takes the longest for that water to evaporate off the ion. There's an average of 18 months to get the lithium, and there's only about a 30 to 50% recovery rate of the lithium because all these ions are so similar to each other in this mixture that some of them precipitate out together. So that's the conventional way that production companies are producing lithium. Neither are really good solutions, and that's kind of the problem that we are trying to address.
So with recovery rates of about 30% and an age-old extraction process that is very time-consuming and runs up to like 3 years, the lithium extraction is creating a scarcity of sorts. So what is NAGX really doing in this space, and what is their value add in this entire extraction process? So here is the part of the conversation where we discuss about NAGX's technology offering. So what is the solution that you're offering, and why do you think that is going to be really the next step forward in this extraction?
So look, I mean, lithium is abundant, right? It's just a problem. You need to crack the problem of how we can efficiently get it in a timely manner, with high recovery rates at low cost. When you're balancing the decision of, do we extract it from hard rock or do we extract it from brine? I think the choice is pretty obvious. Extracting it from brine, there's a lot more technological advancement that could be applied to brine extraction over hard rock. Hard rock, you have to dig it out of the ground, and then you have to get it out of the rock, right? So I kind of put that aside as an option. That's not something that we wanted to pursue. When you look at brine, you have all of this brine. You know exactly where the brine is. You can get the brine out of the ground relatively easy with wells. And then it's just about the process of extracting the lithium from the brine. And what came to mind when I saw the evaporation pond method was that there has to be something better than this. There has to be some sort of way that you can treat the brine and put it through a filter, so to say. And on one end of the filter, you have your feed coming in. And on the other end of the filter, you have different streams that the filter can instantly separate all of the different ions from each other, right? It just made sense. You know, I didn't know that hadn't been created yet, or I didn't know that, you know, there's obviously problems when you create nanotechnology like this, but that was my idea. That was my initial vision, right? So I started doing a lot of research and I came to find that a group out of the University of Texas with colleagues over in Australia at Monash University and the Australian National Laboratory, CSIRO, C-S-I-R-O, had just developed a nanoparticle membrane that could selectively target ions in a mixture. So I immediately contacted the professors that were heading up the labs that were doing this work and started to do more diligence on this breakthrough development that they had created. I came to find that it's a really interesting dynamic in the university setting, right? In the university setting, they don't really create technology or discover technology with a specific industry application in mind. So they had created this ion-targeted selective membrane, but weren't necessarily thinking, oh, we should go use this for lithium extraction.
So you took the technology and you started deployment. So in what phase are you currently with the technology? Have you started deploying it in places?
Yeah, so I took the technology and I said, look, guys, this is really applicable for lithium extraction. You know, lithium is this big problem right now. There's a lot of money in lithium. And I think that this technology would be something that's very appealing for the current lithium production companies. So I kind of put the pieces together down there, getting the main customers involved. You know, these lithium production companies are publicly traded $10 billion market cap companies, and they themselves are looking for this technology, but, you know, it's happening in a small lab in the middle of Texas, and there just needed to be that link, right? So I kind of put the pieces together in order to start taking this out of academia into industry. And to do that, you need to have a lot of development, right? Because academia, you're on a benchtop playing with membranes that are the size of, you know, $0.50. And in industry, you need millions of square meters of membrane in a huge facility that can develop or produce 100,000 tons of lithium, right? So the way that industry looks at where we are in the process is a scale that NASA developed called technology readiness levels. And it's a 1 to 9 system where 1 is, okay, here's the idea. And 9 is the completion of a commercial facility that can develop, you know, the quantities that the market needs, right? On that scale, we're about at technology readiness level 5, TRL 5. And we are putting all of the components into a system. It's one step before pilot plant deployment. So as soon as we get our finished product, we already have, you know, we've done alpha prototypes, we've done beta prototypes. We need to put all of these into a working system. And then, you know, we're testing real world brine right now from some of the biggest production companies on the membranes. We then need to put the membranes into a commercial size module. Think about like a desalination module. It looks the exact same from the outside, the casing and everything. The only difference is the way that the membrane works inside, right? It's like, you know, a battery can look the same from the outside, but it might have different battery chemistry inside.
EnergyX has a technology solution to the entire problem. Their patented LITAS technology can actually solve this. And they are in a typical entrepreneurial cycle or startup cycle where they can actually scale up and deploy their solutions on large scale. So let's find out about where exactly they are in the development phase and when can we actually see their solution on ground. So have you aligned with some manufacturers, existing manufacturers? Have you aligned them with your idea, or how do you plan to deploy this once your technology readiness reaches the highest level?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are already partnered with commercial scaling partners. One of the top research and development membrane manufacturers in the world is a company called MTR, which stands for Membrane Technology and Research, out of the San Francisco area. And there are commercial scaling partners on this, and they're helping us take it out of academia into the next few levels of technology readiness level. So pilot plant all the way up to demonstration plant, which the production companies need to see this scaling. You can't just go from a pilot, like a small pilot plant, to a commercial size. There needs to be steps involved. So each time you can scale up 50 to 100x, but you can't scale up, 10,000x in one step. So they're so MTR is helping us do that.
In terms of the timelines, like when can we see this in commercial operations? Like how far are you? Like say in 2020, is this possible?
No, it's a little bit longer timeline than that. We will hopefully have our first pilot plant up and running in 2020, the second half of 2020. That'll be a really big step to have a pilot plant in the field producing lithium. But like I said, after the pilot plant, then we need to do a demonstration plant, which will be another year and a half. And then it'll take about 2 years to build a commercial scale facility. So we're really looking on the level of 2023, 2024, a facility in the field that's producing 10, 50, 100,000 tons of lithium.
So on a final note, all this is fine, but do you think you'll hit your cost targets? And do you think your level of your proposal of extraction, the technologies that you're proposing, will it be like really sustainable?
So we want to create a really small environmental impact, and we want to offset all of our carbon emissions. You know, this is a membrane breakthrough that the membrane industry hasn't seen in some 20 years since reverse osmosis and desalination membranes were created. So it's a pretty big breakthrough on that level. Until now, I think we have a really sustainable solution with what we're trying to create, for at least for the lithium part, with low environmental impact, small environmental footprint. And, you know, our generation, our creation process of the lithium uses relatively low energy itself. So there's a small environmental footprint with really good output and yields.
So yes, new age entrepreneurs and startups like EnergyX are deploying sustainable solutions to fight global problems. Hope they really materialize. So the next time you hear someone tell you about a scarcity, a global problem, a global challenge, don't worry, entrepreneurs and startups around the world are working on these problems and trying to bring more sustainable solutions. And Mission Chunya will definitely keep track of this global clean tech transition and bring to you more stories like this on podcast every other week. So did you like what you heard on the podcast today? Please let me know. You can also write a review and leave a rating on the Apple Podcast platform. The podcast recently is also available on the Jio7 platform. So make sure you subscribe and give a feedback, give a review on any platform that you use. You can also follow Mission Chunya on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Go by the handle Mission Chunya. And you can also write me an email, missionchunya@gmail.com. So until next time, signing off, this is Mission Chunya, towards a zero carbon economy.